if there's one thing we love as much or more than sports, it is our beautiful television as it sits there and looks at us. And our television leader joins us on the phone lines right now. He's got a new book out that I strongly recommend, even though I think my Kindle says I am 27% done with it. But that's a strong 27%. It's The Revolution Was Televised. It's Alan Sepinwall, ladies and gentlemen. Alan, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, thanks for being with us. We have been a fan of yours, man, a long, long time. I think it goes back to the Sopranos recaps, and then Into the Wire and Lost, and, we've been on quite a journey.
You know what's the best? The best thing about Alan Sepinwall, and there's a lot of things, Alan Sepinwall. It's the rewatch.
Oh, yeah.
So if you like to, what is it, TV One, or what was airing, Channel 101 on DirecTV was airing, like, The Wire again.
Right.
So if you saw it, and then you want to go back, and then read Alan's rewatch, because then he'll refer to things like...
That are in that the future.
That will be coming up 5 years from now, or, hey, this kid we just saw, he's the one that's going to kill Omar.
Absolutely made my Sunday going back, watching that every single week.
Great
stuff.
And
then as soon as it's done, reading your recap. It's the greatest.
You're the man.
Thanks, guys.
You're the best the best human we've ever met in history.
But seriously, as a TV writer in a newspaper, I would imagine those episode recaps were one of those things that did not generate a whole lot of approval or... anything like that from newspaper bosses. So I would like to think the genesis of those was just kind of you with something in your head that you wanted to get on paper, and you didn't really care if it made your bosses happy.
Well, what happened was I was writing at the time for the Star Ledger, which was Tony Soprano's newspaper, the one he picked up at the end of his driveway in
this
season. And so we were in the heart of Soprano country. The show was a really big deal there. And so when I took over the Soprano beat, I would, every now and then they would do an episode where, usually it was where somebody died, and I would come in on Monday, and I would say, gosh, we need to write something about this. So I would do something for the Tuesday paper, and inevitably, every time I did one of those, it got a much bigger reaction than anything I would write about something before it aired, and I began to realize, hey, wait a minute, what people really want is they want to talk about the stuff that they've already seen. And it really excited people, and there was definitely... my bosses got on board with that really, really quickly, because they saw the same thing that I did.
Yeah, and, man, and your book covers this very well. The Revolution Was Televised. I feel like, and maybe you can explain it if I get your vision wrong, but I feel like the whole idea is when TVs became what movies used to be. And when we talk about technology advancing... and we talk about newspapers and their arc. We should also talk about how bright entertainment minds, there's a finite number of them, and forever they would use TV as a way to get to movies. And I don't know when, but about a decade ago, roughly. I don't know if it's completely reversed, Alan, but I think it has to a certain degree, right?
Yeah, there's a story. If you're only 27% of the way through the book, you haven't gotten to it yet. But Graham Yost, the guy who runs Justified on FX, he wrote the movie Speed in the 90s, and he quit a sitcom writing job to do Speed. And he tells me a story about how a year or two after he left the sitcom, he went back there to visit his coworkers, and they were all, gosh, Graham, tell us what the movies are like. Do they just shower you with bags of money? How great is it? And now he's working on a TV show, and he has friends from the movie business going, gosh, Graham, tell us what it's like in TV where they let you do interesting things. I wish I could be there.
Yeah, it's as you put it, HBO kind of there when it started to happen, and maybe Oz and certainly The Sopranos and The Wire made it all happen. But, man, the depth and the... just the awesome return on investment that is there. Wasn't there when we were kids. It's there now. I wonder if we've already seen the golden age, but it's quite a story, and you tell it very well. And you told it very well week to week, and now it's in a book, so I like that.
You know, I want to, and as we're talking this out here, it seems there's some parallel between the internet and newspapers and cable and networks. and see if you guys follow me, because like what you do, Alan and Bob, you got a blog. You're just so much. And we hear you on with Simmons too. We love your appearances on Grantland and whatnot. The ability on the internet to expand or just tell a whole story and really get in depth on something is like what Kate, you know, it, like it's where they started, but then they turned it all upside down. You know, the networks were the real buttoned up. They were the classy thing where cable was the crap. Right? And now it's turned around. Yep. It's totally turned upside down. And the internet was the crap where the newspapers were the classy king. But it's all turned upside down now, where the internet can have the time and space to really get in depth and really make you think, whereas newspapers trying to hold on to their subscribers are dumbing things down and shortening it up and becoming more USA Today. Cable, same thing. It was all crap and MTV and goofy stuff. But then they decided, wait, we can really do something the networks can't. And I don't know if The Sopranos was the first thing. I don't know if your book gets into this, but it's just an interesting parallel that I kind of just thought of.
No, I absolutely see that as a parallel. And The Sopranos wasn't the first show. I mean, there were a lot of shows before that. I deal with some of them in the prologue to the book, like Hill Street Blues and St. Elsewhere. But also, even right before The Sopranos, there was Oz, which kind of gave HBO the courage to do The Sopranos. But you're right. I mean, the thing about newspapers is, and I worked for a newspaper for a long time, I have a lot of friends still doing good work in newspapers, is they're built for kind of a mass audience trying to be appealed to as many people as possible for as many different things. And the internet is a lot more specific in a way that these cable shows are. It's, you're going for something, you're going to be really passionate about it, and you're not worried if you're going to get 50 million people or whatever tuning in. It's just, I'm going to do something, and it's going to resonate with enough people, I think, because it's the exact story I want to tell, and that's what made so many of the shows in this book great.
It's Alan Sepinwall on with us. Of course, he has a new book. Is it hitflix.com? It's What's Alan Watching. We used to search What's Alan Watching on Google, and you will find Alan Sepinwall. I want to get your opinion on a show that we thought was outstanding, and it was a new staple for us last year, and just in this golden age of television, here's another great show, and we fear that it is also, it is totally done a 180. What's your opinion of Homeland?
My opinion of Homeland is that I really, really hope the finale is good, because these last couple of episodes have been a real problem. And like you, I sort of look at this as, you know, the show that's going to, they're going to pass the torch to, and it'll carry it along for a little while. And I think most of the season's been pretty good, but the last 2-3 weeks have been really just insanely ridiculously goofy. And if they don't pull it back somehow and kind of justify what's happened in the finale that airs on Sunday, I'm going to be really disappointed, because that first year was just that good.
It's turning into 24, right?
I mean, it's got a lot of 24 writers involved with it, and it's sort of, in the first season, it seemed like sort of it took all of the good parts of 24 and left the excesses besides, and then this year they're bringing all that back. They figured out how to make the teenage daughter a really likable, interesting character last year. This year she's terrible. It's a mess.
It really is a mess, and I hate that. And it went from a really underrated show to a really overrated show with just maybe Emmy night. And I don't know. I don't know what that does to our perception. I don't. I was thinking about that when I
loved it before the
Emmys. Well, when I was reading Alan's chapter on The Wire this morning, you got me thinking about a couple things. First of all, you blew my mind with the McNulty John C. Reilly story on how that was almost McNulty was John C. Reilly. Dan, I don't know what that
really
does. I don't know what that would do to that character. But then Alan,
what did he do? Did he turn it down?
Well, yeah. What happened there exactly? Do you know, Alan?
Yeah, no, they went after John C. Reilly first because they were trying to get a relative name, and he turned them down, and they went to the British actor Ray Winstone, who had some heat at the time, and he turned them down, and at that point they just sort of started looking at auditions, and Dominic West sent them a tape, which was apparently this ridiculous thing where he was just reading the lines to thin air because his girlfriend in England refused to read the lines with him, and they just thought it was so goofy that they brought him in, and, you know, McNulty.
Yeah, and that got me thinking about these shows that we love, and The Wire and The Sopranos in particular are on our Mount Rushmore. I feel like Breaking Bad is on our Mount Rushmore, and I'm not sure what the fourth show would be there. But for us, those are a cut above the rest of these shows, which are, you know, pretty good in many respects. And in those shows in particular, with the exception of Malcolm in the Middle's dad, they are largely made up of cast members that I didn't know anything about. And I just wonder about that as opposed to, you know, Matthew Perry's next show or, you know, actors we have just ideas of what they're supposed to be and roles they're supposed to be in Clooney or whatever. I there's something about that, right? There's something about that Dominic West is McNulty.
That's absolutely huge. I mean, who knew who James Gandolfini was before you saw The Sopranos? I mean, maybe you remembered him from 5 minutes of True Romance, but this is a guy, a complete unknown. And so, like, if they had cast, originally it was going to be Anthony LaPaglia, and if they'd cast him or Alec Baldwin or some other, like, good actor, but an actor we were familiar with, and you come to the episode where Tony's going to strangle the guy while he's taking metal on the college tour, you're not going to believe he would do it because Anthony LaPaglia would never do that. Alec Baldwin would never do that. James Gandolfini, you had no idea what he would do. And so you believed him as this character and you went with it. And that was a big part of this period was not every show, but a lot of the shows just brought in these guys you never knew before. You know, something like The Shield, Michael Chiklis, a guy who you had never seen in this kind of role before. And you didn't think of him that way anymore.
That might be the fourth one.
Shane
top four? I don't know. That was fairly groundbreaking.
What do you think, Alan? If we get asked 10 times a week what show somebody should watch, you probably get that 1,000 times a week. So give us the Sepinwall Mount Rushmore here.
Oh, God. Let's see. Well, I guess three of them are easy. Three of them are the Sopranos, The Wire, and Deadwood. I always call that the Holy Trinity.
Oh, yeah, Deadwood.
And then if I got to pick a fourth, that's hard because you could make the argument for Breaking Bad. You could make the argument for Mad Men. For Friday Night Lights, for Lost, for a lot of the stuff that's in the book. Right now, I would say Mad Men, but I could be talked out of that very easily and talked into something else.
It's interesting. He's got Breaking Bad below, like something like Deadwood or Mad Men. And we're obsessed with Breaking Bad, but we have to be careful here that we're not elevating Kobe to Michael Jordan status just because it's present tense, you know?
Breaking Bad is a great show, and it's sort of, I feel like the three original HBO shows and then those two AMC shows are maybe a cut above everything else. I don't know. It's always, after a certain point, you're comparing apples and oranges, but we've been lucky. In the last 15 years, we have seen arguably the best dramas that have ever aired on television. You could do a top 10 all-time list and not do anything earlier than The Sopranos, and it would be a perfectly plausible list. You can't do that with sitcoms, and you sure can't do that with sports.
Boy, did you guys mention Mad Men. Did you read Alan's shocking post about the Golden Globe nominations, Bob?
I might have missed it. What happened?
Well, apparently the Golden Globes, who cares, right? But so they nominate 5 for Best Drama. Mad Men out, The Newsroom in.
Whoa.
What a horrible show. Would you agree, Alan? I know that you kind of giggled at the fact that the Golden Globes made this decision. That newsroom so disappointed me.
Disappointment.
Oh, my gosh. I was so looking forward to it, too. Such a fan of the West Wing. What you feel the same way?
Yeah, I was a big fan of the West Wing, big fan of Sports Night. I didn't really like Studio 60, which was the last show he did before this. But I had high hopes because it's like this seemed like his kind of show, behind the scenes of the TV show, and it's so self-indulgent and so not good.
And do we need? My thing was with the romance angles.
Who
like
needs
they're
love
all
in the newsroom?
Over the place. We were, around here. I don't know how common are all these romance angles and people. It's like they're in junior high. The way they talk about that she's embarrassed or she's doing this or, hey, I think she likes you. Oh, no, he likes her. It's really? Is this what goes on in the newsroom?
Maybe it does, but certainly not to this degree and not with, as you say, everybody acting like they're 13 years old. It's really icky on top of the smugness of it all.
If it's not that, then we're getting up on a podium to declare the fact that news didn't used to be like this.
Right, right.
Oh, look, she's cute. News didn't... It's the worst show. It's kind of like... I don't know. It's hard to believe that Aaron Sorkin is actually involved in that show until you hear the dialogue, and then you're like, oh, yeah, he wrote all that.
Absolutely.
Well, there are certain things he does incredibly well and certain things he's just actively terrible at. And sometimes you get a show with all of one, and sometimes you get a show mostly with the other, and this one's mostly with the other.
It's Alan Sepinwall with us here for a little while longer. I highly invite you to get his new book, The Revolution Was Televised. It's great stuff if you're into TV like we are, and you probably are, because TV is awesome. All right, so with regards to cable versus network, I've always wondered this, and I suppose that the answer is somewhere in the middle. But at first we thought cable, because they can get away with so much more, they can have, cussing, they can have violence, nudity, they can go a lot of places regular TV can't go, so that's why it's better than the network. And then someone said, well, no, it's better than the network because the network is willing to pull the plug on a project in 10 minutes if it doesn't get ratings right away. And The Wire wouldn't have lasted till the first commercial set if it was on network TV. So why can network never be cable? Is it content related, or is it the quick ratings high that they love to live on?
I think it's both of those things, I think, are the same thing, which is the networks, as we talked about, they're still, for the most part, trying to program for the big tent. They're trying to get as many people as they possibly can. And sometimes that can work, and you can have a show like NCIS or like Big Bang Theory or whatever. Perfectly fine examples of what they're trying to do. There's nothing wrong with them. I watch them. I'm entertained by them. But they're not, like, going for anything special, because the minute you try to be special and try to be distinctive, you start chasing a few people away, and then you chase a few more people away and more. And then, you know, you have a show which A, needs more patience, and B, needs more viewers than the networks can take. And so every now and then you get a complete fluke like Lost, which I still don't entirely understand how Lost was a hit. I'm just glad that it was. But for the most part, the great experiments were being done on cable, because cable was built to sort of protect them in a way that the network couldn't.
Hey, have you seen any of... There's only one promo that's kind of got me interested as far as new shows. Have they sent you any of The Americans, that thing, the FX?
They haven't yet. I'm supposed to be getting it, I think, by next week. I'm looking forward to that. In general, I mean, I don't love everything FX does, but they've got one of the best batting averages of any channel out there. So yeah. It sounds like a cool idea. KGB agents undercover in America in the 80s. I like that.
What do you think of Game of Thrones as it heads into season 3?
I like Game of Thrones. I don't know that I love it. I think I haven't read these books. I'm usually a sci-fi fantasy guy. I just never got around to them. And then at a certain point, I said, okay, I'll watch the show. I feel like it's got kind of too many characters, and it's trying to bounce from place to place to place. And, like, there are a lot of good actors and a lot of good moments, but nothing ever really builds up enough momentum because they have to keep, you know, bouncing around the map. And they did one episode last year where they stopped doing that, and it all took place in one city while there was a battle going on, and it was just so much better, and it sort of opened my eyes to the things that had been frustrating me about the show. It's a good show. It's probably, you know, I'm working on my top 20 for the year. It'll almost certainly be on the top 20, but I don't think it's going to be in the top 10.
You can see their playbook, though. You can see how Deadwood and The Wire and all that has led us to this, where there's not necessarily a person who's safe to last through the season. It obviously has a big vision. You can see how all these shows, and I think your book ties it together, but you can see how they are all related tangentially, over the last period of time, how TV's evolving. I like it. And I hope, now that all these shows have ended in December, I hope we have something in the springtime to get you fired up. But, man, a little Justified, a little Breaking Bad, and there we go, right?
Yeah, well, I'm Justified back in January. I imagine Mad Men will follow me back sometime in February or March. Breaking Bad will be back in the summer. So, I mean, there's going to be a lot of good stuff coming up.
Well, listen, good having you on the show, man. The great book. We certainly love your blog, and we look forward to visiting with you sometime down the road, man.
That's my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
There he goes. Alan Sepinwall. Check out his book, The Revolution Was Televised, and check him out on hitfix.com.